So here we are, live radio show. I was in talks with a lot of people on social media throughout the week with the big announcement of Motley Crue's breach of contract tour. I guess that's what they're going to call it. Obviously, breaking the cessation of touring contract after the final tour and coming back and touring again. And I actually was in contact with an author, photographer of the book Motley Crue, The Early Days. And I have Will Boyette on the air. We're going to chat Motley Crue. Will, how are you? And welcome to the Dave Scott Radio Show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to you be here. Are a person that is talented in many aspects in the business world. Aside from the Motley Crue stuff, I know that I did actually see you on TV at like 3 o'clock in the morning one night on the World Series of Poker. You worked in the casinos. You have a lot of stories to tell about that nightlife as well, right?
Oh, yes.
We did want to talk about, most importantly, you are the author of the book Motley Crue, The Early Years. You were one of the first two photographers for the professional photographers
Correct.
Of the band, Motley Crue, right? And that is something that just kind of fell in your lap a little bit. Can you bring us back to the beginning of Hollywood and Vine or wherever the heck it was?
Well, for me, it started in West Covina. That's where Tommy and Vince were living. You know, I had gotten out of college in, I think it was 78, and I briefly worked, I went to school for photography, and I briefly worked with the county of L.A., and I wasn't happy there, so I went to work as a family portrait photographer in a mall in West Covina.
Yep.
And I'm more of a visual person, not an audio person, so I wasn't much into music and stuff, more into photos and movies and things. And so I'm working out there in West Covina, and it was in 79, and this young guy comes in with long hair, he's wearing these tight pants, you know, looks like wearing his sister's clothing or something.
And makeup.
He might have, if I can think back that long ago.
Stole his sister's mascara, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, they wore that,
I know,
too.
I think I know who you're talking about here.
I don't know if the gentleman that came in that day was was John Kemp. He was the bass player for a band called Sweet 19.
Yep.
And probably everybody heard about them from the movie The Dirt.
Yep.
And he had come in, and I don't know if he was wearing his mascara. He definitely wore it on stage, but I don't know if he was wearing it that day. But he still wore the same kind of clothes he wore on stage. And he said, you know, I'm in this band. We don't have any money. And, you know, we'd like to get some photos. He said, I tell you what, if you would come out to Hollywood and take some pictures for us, I'll put you on the VIP list. You can come backstage. You can party with the band. And, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I've never experienced, I mean, I heard the stories about sex, drugs, rock and roll, and I said, you know, this sounds like it could be a lot of fun.
Well, you were a freelance photographer back in the early 80s where film was expensive and the profession was something that was scarce. It's not like everybody had cell phones and all of that.
Exactly,
to hire a photographer, you were the man for Motley Crue, one of the first people.
Yeah, so I went out there and I saw, they were playing at the Starwood, and I didn't know who the band was.
It was Sweet 19 we're talking about here right now,
yeah.
Right? With Tommy Lee as the drummer.
Yeah. So, you know, Starwood had two entrances, one for the regular people and one for the VIPs where the band and their family and stuff goes in. So he said he was going to put my name on the list. And it was like an hour and a half drive to go to Hollywood. It was a long way.
Yep.
So, you know, I was kind of going all out on this. And when I got there, my name was on the list. There was no problem. I went right in. So the first thing I said, let's just go backstage because I don't know anybody else here. So I went backstage and found him, and that's when he introduced me to his band members, which was Tommy Lee, their drummer, and Greg Leon, who they always talked about in The Dirt. He was the singer, the songwriter, and the guitarist. And so it was just the three of them, and when they went on to play, you know, like I said, I'm not a music expert, so I don't know if they were great, but Tommy really impressed
Motley
me when
Crue,
I saw
him. Motley Crue actually was a cross between Sweet 19 and Nikki's band London. And Greg Leon was the original singer that Nikki had in mind at first. It only lasted for a short period of time, of course. And Tommy Lee, of course, and Vince Neil turned to you for some of their very first headshot, professional headshot photographs.
Yeah, when they when Motley Crue started, I was with Tommy doing Sweet 19, and when Tommy went to his next band, and then he went to his next band, which was Motley Crue, we were friends, and I went with him along the way. And so Nikki also had a similar situation. He had a photographer that was with him in London, which was Don Adkins. So when he went to Motley Crue, Don came with Nikki. So when the band started, they had these two photographers there, and so we would do their shows, and if you see any of their early flyers, you'll see, like, credits for both of us, and you'll see the photos on there. And, you know, I think Don probably got more of the photos than I did because he was friends with Nikki, and, you know, Nikki ran the band, so...
Yeah, Nikki had his own guy, right?
They still use a lot of my photos in their ads, and their early ads that you see, like, that were in BAM magazine and things like that, you know.
So we are here to help promote your book. You are the author of Motley Crue, The Early Years, a visual book, I take?
Yeah.
You have pictures of the band. I seen Nikki Sixx in the six-inch stilettos or whatever he was wearing there that he used to light his legs on fire. All of the early rumors come true in pictures with what you have.
Yeah.
We're able to take some vintage photos of this band. Can you describe a little bit further of just how rare this stuff really is for the people that are interested in possibly checking out your book and buying it perhaps?
Yeah, you can. The book is available at CruePast.com, CRUEPAST.com. And in the book, we have, you know, as you had mentioned earlier, people just didn't have cell phones back then. So, and nobody, of course, knew who Motley Crue was when they were starting out. So it was just like me and Don, and maybe there might be other photographers that were working for some other band that was performing that night, and they might have shot a few photos. But there wasn't really that many people out there shooting Motley Crue until probably 6 months in. Then they started picking up a lot of fans, and the whole Hollywood scene seemed to change. You know, everybody started spiking their hairs. That's when everyone started coming out with, like, spandex and wearing leather jackets and stuff. And so it kind of just, like, changed after that. And
it took off quick, very quick. So your experience with the band, you were roommates with Tommy Lee, was it?
Yeah, Tommy and I, like I said, I met him when he was first starting out with Sweet 19, and he lived in West Covina, and when Motley Crue got together, they're out in Hollywood, and it was about an hour and a half drive. And at that time, from when Motley Crue started, I had my own photo studio in the city of San Gabriel, which was like halfway.
So and you got headshots, the very first professional headshots of Tommy Lee as well as Vince Neil, and I know that you've got some rare stuff from...
They were driving to Hollywood, they'd stop by my studio, and then we would mess around and take photos and stuff.
Right.
And his mom, she commissioned me one time when he first got into Motley Crue, and she was freaked out by his blue-black hair, it was all sticking straight up.
Yeah.
And she wanted to get a nice portrait that she could hang on her wall. So she had Tommy come in. He came in one day with Bullwinkle, and we did a whole bunch of photos for that. And she bought one big, huge one. She put it up on her wall, and like 3 years later, I went and saw it. It was still on the wall, and I was like, that's right on, you know?
So social media has had a strong interest in this girl, Bullwinkle, and you seem to be the guy that knew her the most or the best on a personal level. What can you tell us about Bullwinkle, which was Tommy Lee's girlfriend, most famously known for some pretty raunchy reasons?
I never experienced any of that.
She was a squirter. And that's what attracted Tommy to her. He just couldn't break up with her. That's just some of the rumors that I hear.
Well, those are true, yes. I mean, she was at all the shows. They were always together. He met her when he was in the band Dealer, which was the band before Motley Crue.
Yeah.
And
that was Tommy's bands.
Yeah, after Sweet 19, he went to, Greg Leon went to Quiet Riot, so Tommy went to Dealer.
And Greg Leon, by the way, which is one of our mutual friends on Facebook, is the guy that was originally going to be the lead singer for Motley Crue. And was he for a short period of time, to your knowledge, the band together?
Well, I don't know if he was going to be their singer.
Because
I understood he was their guitarist.
If you he's Motley Crue, what is this all about? These guys just seem to be completely different from everybody else. What's your take on that?
Well, that they are, you know, and their take on it is, you know, like with Greg Leon. As you had mentioned before, it was like the bass player had left and Nikki stepped in. It was the three of them. And the reason why Greg didn't stay with Motley Crue was because they had a disagreement on what the band's future would be. And Nikki was all about the theatrics, the show. And Greg was saying, no, it's about the music. We don't need the show. And so that's why they parted and went their own ways. And it did turn out that Nikki was right. The show and everything is what propelled them to their success. I mean, the music is great, too, but the theatrics, as you had mentioned, lighting them on fire and stuff, you know, I think all of that helped them get a lot of attention and propel them faster into the eyes of people, you know.
Well, I think Nikki saw what Kiss was doing and that the show was actually bigger than the music, and you could become famous and just make it as, you know, somebody that just puts on this theatrical thing. You know, because people want to be wowed, you know, and, you know, along with singing the music, they want to see something blow up in their face. And that's what Motley Crue is kind of about.
Yes.
Will, how can people get a hold of your book?
They can go to crueepaft.com, CRUEPAST.com. And basically, I break all the photos down into the different shows, and then I kind of relate the story about what it was like if you were at that show. So you'll get to see the photos. You'll get to understand, like, you know, where the after party would be, where the location was. I talk a little bit about the venue so you can kind of get the atmosphere. So I'm trying to put the reader back in the early years, put them what it was like in that first year with Motley Crue. Before, because they did, it was in '82 that they got their record contract, and that's when they hit the stage and everybody started seeing them. But those first early years is where the rare stuff is, and so that's what I have in that book. So it never was put out before. I mean, the photo's like what, almost 40 years old now.
One of a kind photos that you have.
Yeah.
As far as I contacted you about a week ago, before I even had any knowledge that the rumors were true. So you were a guy that I was very interested in interviewing, and then it all seemed to blow up within the next couple of days after that, where Motley Crue is actually reuniting and blowing up the contract. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's, I always figured they would do that. I've always said they would. I didn't think they were ever going to stop.
It's like one of the best planned publicity stunts ever, right?
You know? Yeah.
But I actually thought and I believed in Nikki Sixx that he really, I think the band was in a bad place at the time. And I think, I truly believe they all really felt at the time. They're sick of each other. They're done. As far as you, I want to talk about your career a little bit, because you are a guy of many business ventures. I know that you're in real estate. You have bought properties and sold properties. You are a guy that has worked in the casinos. You lived the life out in California. How is that different, perhaps, from a guy like me that's living in New Hampshire here on the East Coast? You've got a lifestyle that most people would like to brag about. I saw you on TV on a World Series of Poker. Tell us about that. Tell us about that. Tell us about being a dealer in the casinos.
Well, actually, I was a professional gambler in the casinos, and I wasn't making much money. And I met a female dealer there, and we got married. And you know, when you get married, she says you got to go to work. So I decided, you know, if I can't beat the casino, join it. So I started working in the casino as a poker dealer. And then I went up to the, I kind of moved my way up to working the tournament. And I was working for the Commerce Casino, which is the world's largest card casino. All the games are cards. So you have blackjack, baccarat, poker, that stuff. They don't have slot machines and things. So being that it's the world's largest card casino, of course, they're going to have some of the largest poker tournaments. And so for some reason in my life, as you mentioned, I have many different careers. I always seem to be in the right place at the right time. And I don't know, it's such an uncanny thing. So here I was working on a poker tournament, and they offered me the chance because this new TV show was coming out called the World Poker Tour, and they wanted to put cameras, and everybody's going to see the whole cards of what the players have. So so at our casino, they would have a few of the different tournaments there from the tour, and they wanted their best dealers to be able to deal the tournament on the TV. So there would be four of us. And so the four of us would deal that tournament. And that was how I got onto that TV show. And it was a lot of fun. And working in the casino industry, especially at the high level there, just like in the music industry, getting to work with all the big stars, Motley Crue, I worked with Tom Petty, and all the other big bands that were out there. And now to be in this gaming industry, and then you have all of a sudden all these poker players becoming stars on TV, and now here I am working with them. So it's like wherever I go, people seem to become millionaires. Not me, but they do.
Right.
I start with the Motley Crue. What do? They go on and become multimillionaires. That's why I start with the Motley Crue. And it just goes on and on.
Tell us what it was like to be Tommy Lee's roommate, because we all knew roommates fight. And it's, you know, he was not famous. You probably two young, struggling guys. How did that work out?
Oh, yeah. Tommy, you know, I have to admire him. And probably what he taught me in life was, you know, his passion. I mean,
you knew Tommy Lee when nobody knew who the hell this guy was, other than the fans of Sweet 19. Right?
Pretty much, yeah. It was not too, and, you know, his parents had faith in him, and his family did, and I had faith in him. And,
he relied probably on the assistance of his friends and buddies just on a daily basis, just to jam together and just to eat something and just get by and rock and roll somehow and play a gig. He was really trying. And in the beginning, he wasn't you knew him. He didn't have money, right?
No, he didn't. His parents kind of were helping him out mostly. You know, they would drive him, or friends would drive him, or, you know, he had a van that he would drive around in, but whenever it would break down, his dad would help him fix it and things like that. So, you know, he had the support
of his family. Tommy did have a decent family, even though, you know, he did battle with his dad. He was a military guy. I can understand how playing in a rock and roll band didn't jive with the old man.
Yeah, but, you know,
first,
when I would go over to his house, I never saw anything like that. They always seemed real nice to everybody, and he seemed like...
So you knew the family. You were over the house?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'd go to his house in West Covina. You know, they have the movie The Dirt. There's that episode where he goes in the kitchen wearing his sister's clothing. And, you know, it was just like that. You know, you go over there, they're sitting around having fun. But, and actually, Tommy let me go into the garage. His dad built him, like, this soundproof studio inside the garage, and he had his drum set in there, and he let me sit in his drum set, and I would play. And then I told Tommy, I said, listen, you go in the sound studio, you play on the drums. I'm going to go sit in your living room. I want to see if I can hear you. And we would close the doors. I'd sit in the living room with his parents, and he would go in and play, and you couldn't even hear him. It was like, wow. And I don't know if the parents did that because they didn't want to hear him playing, or they did that because they want to help him with his career. I never asked him, but there was other times. Somebody came by his parents' house and they sprayed his van. Another band, they sprayed the name of their band on the side of his van.
I heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah, and his dad went out there and cleaned it off, took all the paint off the side. I mean, his dad did. I always saw his dad do a lot of nice things for him. You know.
Yeah.
And they're always at their shows backstage, you know, supporting him.
At what point did you know that this band was going to be one of the biggest bands in rock and roll? I mean, you knew
well,
from the
knew
very
Tommy
beginning.
Was going to be big when I first saw him.
You knew the club
him.
Shows were good. You knew the band when they had no money. When did you first realize that this one of my best friends is going to be famous?
Well, I think I'm kind of biased because when I went to the first Motley Crue show, even though most people, like when they started off, they were booing them because nobody knew them, and they were there to see Y&T, and people were, just like in the movie, they were booing them.
Yeah.
And so they won the crowd over, and they kind of won me over right there, too. And it was like, because I already knew Tommy was great, and this was the first time I'd actually seen Mickey, or Vince even perform. So I never saw any of them perform in their previous band, so this was the first time. And I said, heck, this is great. So I tried to start going to all the shows I could. And, you know, you want to – the nice thing about being a rock photographer is if you get in with a band and they break up, those four guys go to different bands. Now you got four other bands to work with. They break up. Now you got 16. They break up. Now you got 100. It multiplies.
So were you one of the guys that left the club show and walked up around the corner to the Motley House?
Yeah, well, I would go to the Motley House before the shows because
David Lee Roth was there snorting cocaine.
I've
heard all the stories. You wonder how much is true, which leads me to, and I don't mean to cut you short by any means, but the movie, The Dirt, this is one of the reasons why I thought it would also be good to have you on, is you know the real dirt. How much of the movie is deceptive and kind of just told from a one-sided point of view?
Well, there's different aspects of the movie. If you're talking about the locations that were in the movie, they, you know, were pretty similar. The Starwood when they showed the Starwood in the movie, they had these huge billboards there, and those were the exact billboards that were on the Starwood back in 81. They got that right, although the Starwood is no longer there, so they just had to use a different building. But it looked, you know,
very
they tried
close.
To make it look somewhat close. Yeah. And then, of course, they show where the apartment is, and it's like, okay, we walk across the street from the whiskey, and there's the apartment. But actually, it was a few buildings up the street. So there, you know, and I can understand the budget and things like that. I mean, you can't recreate everything like all that. So that's
exactly.
Okay. But they
like
were pretty
movies,
close.
Movies
and
movies.
Yeah, and the storyline, you know, they did condense a few things and try to put them into one aspect. For instance, you were talking about David Lee Roth snorting the cocaine in there. And so from my experience from that story where I was there was that I had gone to a club that evening with a lady, and we had gotten into a fight, and she had and left me. And so when the show was over, I was walking up to the Motley House, and walking in front of me was David Lee Roth, and he was holding her hand. So they got into the Motley House first, and so when I walked into the house after them, they were sitting at the table. In the movie, they show them sitting on the couch, but they were sitting at the table. She was sitting on his lap, and so they were snorting the cocaine there. But in the movie, they put him on the couch so that dude in the movie could come up and talk to him, and so forced them to push him into David Lee Roth, causing the mirror to fall down. But according to the roadies, the Barry or Skull or Crossbones or Tim Lucey or any of them people, they'll tell you that the mirror fell down. They were in a bedroom in doing some coke, and the mirror and Mark Ramirez, he had stopped the mirror from falling on David Lee Roth. So, but I think they took those two different stories and combined them into one and put it into that one scene there. So there was stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. Well, what about?
And I don't think there was ever a fight at the first show. I never saw it. But you know, I'm running around. I might have been trying to move for another angle, but I would think there was such a fight, there would have been a commotion that everybody would have known. And I believe somebody might have spit on him, but I think Motley Crue was a class act. They went on with the show and just kept performing, and the crowd started cheering them, and that's when they won them over.
Yeah, it was kind of like a cross between what was actually happening and what was fabricated. Like every time somebody tells a story, it seems to change a little bit. All the girls, they threw themselves at the band, you know.
Correct.
And, I mean, Motley had reached that status of almost like Beatlemania, where it was like you could not, like, you know, for lack of a better term, beat them off of you. The organization is not going to like that. The Me Too movement, but hey, I stand by my comments. I didn't mean any harm by it, but basically the girls were really loved this band, and they would do anything to get close to them.
So you're not doing anything illegal. You're getting permission, but it was just, you just ask, they say yes, and then you go. You don't have to buy them dinners. You don't have to wine and dine them. It was just like a free, promiscuous, like even, I guess maybe something like the 60s were for the hippies. I don't know.
Gene Simmons boasts about his sexual life that he's had with, like, he's gone on to say that it's been thousands of women that he's been with. You know, so it's, you think the Motley tour is just, it's just too much money involved for them to say no?
Well, I don't know if it's the money. It could be, but I think it might be just a brilliant marketing move. I mean, you do have the movie coming out, and there's a lot of people that have never seen Motley Crue perform at all, and now they're fascinated by this movie, and they want to go see this band. I mean, even the other day, I was wearing a Motley Crue shirt, and I went to the Gap, and the little 20-year-old girl there, she's a cashier, she goes, "Oh, that's a really cool shirt." And I go, "You know this band?" And she goes, "Yeah." And it's like, dang, she's only 20. She probably, I mean, they, when they stopped touring, she was only 15. Maybe she had records or maybe not. But, yeah, there's a whole new audience out there, and I don't know, maybe they just want to keep going. Like you said, 5 or 6 years, things change.
But a listening audience that may have just tuned in, we are speaking with Will Boyette, a author of the book Motley Crue, The Early Years. Will was there with the band before anybody else knew them, basically, other than the direct girlfriends, right? But you had to kind of like stand off to the side when the girls are around, right? You know, did Tommy have any privacy issues, like with the girls that he brought over, and when you're living with them, with somebody? How did that all work? You guys had to feed each other. You had to get through your day-to-day situation. You were a photographer. He was in a band. Gosh, did you butt heads at all?
Well, not really. I think him and I had similar personalities. We got along pretty well.
Was he able to pay his rent on time?
I don't think he paid any rent. I let him live for free. I was helping him out.
Now he has $75 million. Go figure.
But, oh, I'll tell you, you want to hear an interesting story?
I do.
Okay, so when Tommy moved out of my house, I wasn't home at the time, and he had written me a letter, and he said, "Will, thank you for letting me."
F you, buddy.
No, he just said, "Thank you for letting me stay. I owe you one." So,
I owe you one.
Yeah, so he owes me one. So years later,
what,
I talked to him.
1 million?
Well, I heard that he had this beautiful new home now that he's got all this money with Motley Crue. And he was married to Pamela Anderson, and the story was he had this drum set set up at his house, and there was a swing over it, and Pamela Anderson would swing over it. So one day I was talking to him, and I said, "Tommy, I go, can I come over to your house? I'd love to see your home over there. I want to see that little setup you have with Pamela swinging." And he wouldn't let me come to his house. And I'm thinking to myself, "Well, you owe me one. I let you live with me for 6 weeks." But, you know, he might have his own reasons for that. I can understand.
He did have somebody break
into his house and steal the porno film. And there's probably other people that take his personal stuff. I don't know. But
he was kind of scaling back on the friendliness after the sex tape. And, it gets to the point where you're so famous that, like, yeah, you need your personal space. I kind of understand that with the meet and greets that he doesn't do, you know. But at the same time, I'm kind of crossed because you're on tour with the band. You're working, buddy. So, yes, Will, one more time. We want to get people buying some copies of your book.
Go to crewpath.com, and right on the main page, just click on that, and that'll take you to the order page.
Crew, what is it?
Crewpath.
C-R-U-E.
P-A-S-T.
And the name of your book is Motley Crue, The Early Years. Tommy shunned you for the home visit, but do you still get along with him? Do you still talk with Tommy Lee?
I don't talk to him much anymore. He's got different opinions and ideas than I do.
He's getting to be an old, grumpy old man.
Well, you said it, not me.
I did say it. I mean, he looks like a freaking auto mechanic. He needs to go shave. I mean, you're supposed to be a rock star. He's coming across as like somebody that could play a commercial in freaking Meineke, for crying out loud. Shaving up, clean it up, boy. Yeah, I love Tommy Lee, but he's very opinionated. I know, Will, that you are a political person yourself. And you called Tommy out on some of his unintelligent remarks because it seems like he just shoots off his mouth. He doesn't really know politics. I know you do. So,
oh, I don't know if I do either, but I never really got into politics until we have our current president. You know, and it's not because I'm a Trump lover, but I've been praying to God, and more of a religious person than anything, and I've been praying to God, and I said, God, please give us somebody who's not a politician, because I think all the politicians are crooked. And so in my lifetime, which has been, 60 years, we haven't really had everybody who's been a politician. I think we had that one guy, but he dropped out, or I forgot him a couple years ago. But somehow Trump ends up, and he's the first guy, no political experience.
Were you talking about Romney? Were you thinking about Romney?
No, there was another Republican guy that was a real businessman, and he was kind of...
Oh, Ross Perot.
That guy, yeah, and then he dropped out, and I was going to vote for him.
He died, actually, so many years ago.
Yeah,
recently,
and so here was the first time I had a chance to vote for a businessman, so I said, you know what, let's take a chance.
A lot of people
felt
that way.
And so I voted on Trump.
I remember that presidential election. A lot of people felt that way.
Yeah, so, you know, Tommy and I have different views on Trump, but I think Tommy is exactly like Trump. You know, he grabs women. He's got a lot of money. He marries white women. He's been successful. He's had a TV reality show just like Trump. He's had a successful career just like – he's done everything just like Trump.
Oh, my God, I've never actually had anybody compare it like that. It makes all the sense in the world to me now.
Think about it.
He's
everything
just like
done,
Trump.
Tommy's always also done. It's like,
he's
except
just
for the presidency.
Like Donald Trump. You guys
exactly.
should get along, man. And yet he bashes them on social media saying F this and F that and blah, blah, blah. He doesn't like anything about Donald Trump. But yet he's the same goddamn thing.
So, yeah, so I kind of wonder, does he really hate himself? I don't know. You know, maybe.
Yeah. Well, his son hates him. He knocked him out. Yeah. I think maybe he deserved that one. But awesome. The life of Motley Crue, there is many stories that can be told from many people. We are on the air live with one of them, Will Boyette. Will Boyette is the author of his self-released book, Motley Crue, The Early Years. One-of-a-kind pictures that you would never see anywhere else, right? You own all of these pictures, the copyrights to it. And,
yes, sir.
And how can
people...
Well,
most of the photos are all new. I mean, there have been probably maybe 10% of them have been published in magazines or ads or something over the years.
Do you have any narration under the pictures to guide people into, this was the whiskey show or this was the Starlight... Or something like that. Do you tag the
pictures? Well, in the book, they're all broken down into chapters, and each chapter is about each show. So you'll have the first show, and then you'll see all the photos from the first show. You hear the stories about the first show, and that'll be a few pages. And then you go to the next show, and then it'll be like maybe it was the whiskey. So you'll see shows from the Starwood, the whiskey, what else do they have? The Roxy, the Country Club. I got one from Centrix, which is a club that's not even there anymore, and then Troubadour, Starwood. So all of the clubs that they played in the Hollywood area, you're going to see in that book with them playing at that club. And then I tell the stories about, you know, the club where the party would usually be afterwards and a little bit about the venues, you know, how big, how many people they hold, just so you get an idea how many people were at that show. And then I try to put pictures from right up in front of the stage or from back of the stage so you can get, like, a nice view of what's going on in at the show.
Right, right. And this is something that is very unique. One more time, where do they go to get this book?
Crewpast.com.
And if you mention...
CRUEPAST.com.
Coming from a lifelong Motley Crue fan, I find it very interesting. Did Tommy leave... your apartment and go to the Motley House? Is that how that kind of worked?
Yeah, he wanted to be closer to his work and to Hollywood there. And so then when their manager got them the Motley House, that's when he moved in with the other boys. They lived over there.
And how far
asked me about living with him. This guy never stopped playing the drums. I mean, we would watch TV. He would put a chair in front of himself, and he would just drum on it. And then when he had to go to the bathroom, he would drum on the wall all the way walking down to the bathroom. And then when he's sitting on the toilet, he's drumming. I mean, the guy never stopped. That's why I said he's got such a passion for drumming.
I know a quote from Tommy Lee saying that he just had the stereo cranked to 11, 24 hours a day. Is that true as well?
Cranking the music
at all times. That sounds like Tommy.
He was pretty intense. That was for sure, yeah. He was only living with me for like 6 weeks, and then he was off to the Motley House, and then I would just go and see them over there. So, I didn't have to live with them anymore.
Right, But
I was just helping him out. He never paid rent. I didn't expect anything, that's all.
And the mental health...
We just do it out of friendship, you know? That's what we do.
Yeah, in the mental health world, they would just call him high energy. You know,
he's always had a lot of energy.
There's nothing wrong with that, people. You know, as long as you're using it in a positive way. Did you ever think that he would end up with the women that he has? I mean, you could call it a one-hit wonder if you scored Heather Locklear, but I mean, the Pamela Anderson thing.
Well, you know, I always had a crush on Heather Locklear. That was my... I'm not really a Pamela Anderson person, but...
Heather's cool.
I it's not Heather. I thought, man, he scored with her. That's fantastic. But no, I never thought that he would end up like that.
The Motley Machine will continue forever, my friend. Don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's why they're coming back now. They want to keep that fire fueled and going.
Well, Nicky had another kid. I guess he figures he's going to come back and make another $150 million. You know, just to make sure the kid's going to be all right after he's, you know.
I mean, after you do all that work on the movie, you may as well capitalize on the momentum.
Right.
And do a tour.
Bring us up to date. What do you do in the current day and age, whether it be a hobby or pushing the book? Do you have any plans to release other books? What's in the future for Will Boyette?
I don't plan on releasing any other books. This was something probably I should have done a long time ago, but a lot of the Motley Crue fans, you know, like they're doing to Motley Crue, they were coming to me and they're saying, hey, you know, we've never seen all these photos. You had them hidden all these years. Why don't you release it? And, I never really thought much about it, but with the digital age nowadays, it's a lot easier to go out and, you know, to produce a book. And these are the major brands, they don't want to touch that kind of stuff anymore because a lot of the bookstores have been going out of business, so you can do it digitally and publish a book. So I said, you know what, let me just publish my own book, and we'll get all my photos out there for the fans. I signed each one individually. The hardcover is a limited edition, so once those are sold, there won't be any more. So who knows, could be a collector's item.
Since I have you on the phone, what about the roadies? Fans that have followed the band, I heard that people would just follow the buses across country, and drug dealers would actually follow them, and kind of just make the Motley money just following this rich band that was just raking it in.
Yeah, you should have, like, one of the roadies on here. He could probably tell you all the stories
about,
there.
There's a story about Ozzy snorting ants, you know, right? But how much was that was really true?
Well, there was a lot of drugs, but, you know, I was only with them up until they got their record contract. And then the record company says, we have our own photographer, we don't need you anymore, And after that, they started touring, and they would just disappear for a whole year, so they weren't really performing in Hollywood anymore. So, in fact, when they got signed, pretty much all the bands in Hollywood got signed at that time. So Rat, Quiet Riot, all of them. So they all just disappeared and went on touring, and Hollywood just died right after that. So I had to adapt my career and change places. And so I made up this fake press pass. And I used to use the press pass and get in free to all the major concerts.
Really?
And I could get right up front at the stage and take photos, and then I'd sell them to the magazines, and so I get money that way instead of, you know, working with the bands in Hollywood. So, but yeah, so that's what happened then. They had all left, and that's when all these stories that you're talking about happened. You know, when they were here in L.A., you know, there's no drug dealers following around. There'd be drug dealers coming to the party and giving everybody drugs and stuff like that. I mean, I know one guy would come with all the cocaine, and they would give out lines, and everybody would do coke. I didn't see the band paying for it. Everything was just people were just giving it away for free, I guess.
Yeah.
So they wanted to be at the Motley Crue apartment, you know?
Right. It's just amazing, amazing stuff. You know, do you think the movie, I haven't yet to see it myself, but do you think that the producers kind of, I'm really kind of sketchy about this. I don't know what to think, like, because I know it's coming from somebody's point of view. Not necessarily the truth. I'm hearing that it's kind of half truth, half what you heard, and half what they're showing you.
On what? On the movie?
Yeah. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it's all boils down to the entertainment value is all that matters. Doesn't matter if it's a truth or a lie or an exaggerated truth. It's Motley Crue. We're showing it to you. This is how we want to present it.
I think, I can only comment like on the first half of the movie because that was pretty much everything up until Shout at the Devil. Then after that was the second half of the movie where all the dark stuff started happening.
Yeah, like they kind of pick and choose where they pick up. Do they skip over certain important, vital periods of their career?
Oh, yeah, but they couldn't fit in all that stuff in just a short movie. Maybe they could have made it like a miniseries or something with four or five episodes. That would have been great.
Right, obviously. A band 35, 40 years. The same thing with the Rolling Stones. How do you fit it all into a one-hour show?
Or, exactly.
You know, I love the Stones. I know that Nicky is a big fan of the Stones. I think he wants to go out in a big way. That's why they're coming back with an arena tour, because in Nicky's eyes, he wants to be like Keith Richards and the Rolling Stones. He doesn't play arenas anymore. He plays freaking stadiums. And that's how Motley Crue will go out. Do you agree with me, Will?
Yes. They'll be doing the big one.
And this will actually, I think it will catapult them. I mean, that final tour, we didn't even touch on London, Will. Did you know the band London? Obviously.
No, I never actually saw the band play or even heard about him until Motley Crue. So when I met Nicky, then I started hearing about London. I didn't even know anything about it before that.
What were your personal opinions and feelings on your meetings with Nicky Six in the early day? Was he a nice guy? Was he just somebody?
Oh, yeah.
He just wanted to work hard and make progress with his band, right?
Yeah, you know, my opinions of each guy was, you know, Tommy was the guy who, like you said, has a lot of energy. He's a young kid. He just wants to get wild and crazy. And then you had Mick, who was kind of like more of the recluse, the quiet dude. But he's was smart, intellectual. I like conversations with him. And then you have Vince. All he wanted to do is meet girls. He don't really want to talk to you. I just got to go meet a girl.
He doesn't even want to sing anymore. He just wants the girls.
Yeah, he just wants to spend time talking to a girl, not another dude. And then Nicky, he wants to talk music, songwriting, which I was not into, but he would be great talking to other musicians. They would get along great. But, you know, the time we spent together was, you know, talking about the photos. And, you know, when I come by their house, we would he'd teach me how to do my hair and stuff. So if it was Motley Crue related or anything like that, yeah, he's a great guy to hang around with. But I didn't really find any, like, hobbies or other things that we would have interest in or anything like that, because he was just all about music. And as I say, I didn't know the darn thing about music.
Well, if you crossed Nicky Six, would you get your ass beat? Was he a tough guy? Or was it just talk? Because I've heard some stories about them getting into brawls after the show. And Nicky, I think he upsells it a little bit where, you know, he actually battled with the police, for crying out loud. Was that really how he was like? Or was it, you know... was he a little bit...
He was high on drugs or something, quite possibly. You never know. The people, I think maybe more Tommy like that.
Did you ever see any of the guys actually fight? Like the crowd or something like that? Like Nicky, he claims that he jumped in the crowd and, you know, because
I never saw any of that stuff. Yeah, but of course I wasn't there all the time. But I was I'd probably go to their apartment maybe two or three times a week.
Will, and thank you for speaking with me tonight. You've had a lot of insight onto a band that, many people think they know. It's guys like you that have the real dirt and details on what it's like to have known the band before the rest of the world got to, right?
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Will. We'll keep in touch. Thank you. This is a great interview. Tonight's show will re-air on Sunday, starting at 8 p.m. WNHMFM.org if you'd like to re-listen to the interview and spread the word on your socials as well. Okay? So with that, Will, thank you, and we'll catch up soon down the road. Let's keep this Motley train rolling, because it is.
All right, Dave, you got it. Yeah,
one hell of a ride and a very interesting band. I'm not ready to say let's end it yet. Let's keep it going, and that's my opinion. So thank you.